The X-Zone radio and TV show is largely an opinion talk show. All opinions, comments, or statements of fact expressed by Rob McConnell's guests are strictly their own and are not to be construed as those of the X-Zone radio and TV show or in any manner endorsed by Rob McConnell, Relmar McConnell Media Company, Talkstar Radio Network, its affiliated stations, or employees.
To the X-Zone, a place where fact is fiction and fiction is reality. Now, here's your host, Rob McConnell.
Welcome back to the X-Zone, everyone. My name is Rob McConnell, and we're coming to you live and around the world on the Talkstar Radio Network from our studios at the head offices and studios of Relmar Broadcast Network in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. If you'd like to give us a call, our toll-free number is 1-877-528-8255. Email xzone@talkstarradio.com. On MSN Messenger, talkstarradio@hotmail.com. And our websites, xzoneradio.com, xzonetv.com, and xzoneipod.com. My guest this hour is John Kachuba, and he is the series editor of America's Haunted Road Trip Series, the author of Ghost Hunting Ohio, Ghost Hunting, How to Write Funny, and the co-author with his wife, Dr. Mary Ann Newman, of Why Is This Job Killing Me? And John Kachuba, welcome back to the X-Zone. How are you, John?
Hello, Rob. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Always super having you on the show, and congratulations on the success of America's Haunted Road Trip.
Oh, thanks very much. It's always great to be on your show. I've enjoyed it. You and I have spoken several times in the past. It's always been fun.
Yeah. And
America's Haunted Road Trip is a brand new series just debuting now. The books are just literally getting into the bookstores as we're speaking.
Tell me, John, why are ghosts so popular now?
You know, I've been asked that question so many times, and I always keep thinking of different reasons, but I think primarily one thing that I think that comes through to me all the time is that when times are bad or when, people are conflicted with what's going on in the world around them or world events, they look for other outlets. They look for sort of some maybe hope or inspiration for something better beyond them. And I think, you know, it could be just turning to religion like a lot of people do, but I also think that the quest for the paranormal, to understand what comes beyond, is also sort of that quest for something after, something greater, something better than ourselves. So I think that's part of it. I think it's just a simple diversion as well. It's become very popular with TV and talk shows like yours and books and ghost groups and ghost conferences. Becoming very widespread these days.
Do you think that with all the television shows on ghost hauntings and things that go bump in the night, that this is helping bring the public forward with stories that they would not have normally shared before?
I think so, Rob. In my last books that I wrote, the Ghost Hunting Ohio, Ghost Hunting Illinois, and Ghost Hunters, I probably interviewed somewhere about 300 people. And often somebody would tell me a story, and they would say, you know, I can't believe that I've told you that. I've never told that to anybody else before. And I think it is the fact that we're seeing it in the media, presented on television, and all the other forms that we just said. And so people are coming forward. You know, they're opening up to others with their experiences. They're not afraid of talking about it. They're not afraid of being perceived as, you know, lunatics. Like they may have been maybe, 50 years ago or so.
I would even say 10 years ago.
Yeah, you're probably right.
All right, John, please stand by. You and I have to take our first commercial break. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Exo Nation, John Kachuba is my special guest. We're talking about America's Haunted Road Trip. And if you'd like to find out more about John Kachuba, his website is www.johnkachuba.com, and that is JohnKachuba.com. My name's Rob McConnell. This is The X-Zone, a place where people dare to believe and dare to be heard, Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. Eastern until 2 o'clock Eastern. And the show is repeated in its entirety from 2 a.m. until 6 a.m. here on the Talkstar Radio Network. If you'd like to send an email, xzone@talkstarradio.com, on MSN Messenger, talkstarradio@hotmail.com, and our websites, xzoneradio.com, xzonetv.com, and xzoneipod.com. I'll be back on the other side of this break with John Kachuba as we continue from our studios in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, right here on Talkstar. Don't go away.
X-Zone Apple iPod Touch, giving you the power to grow. Exclusively to the X-Zone Nation at $275 while quantities last.
Everybody gonna dance tonight. Everybody gonna feel alright. Everybody gonna dance around tonight.
X-Zone iPod! Here we grow again.
Another turning point, a fork stuck in the road. Time grabs you by the wrist, directs you where to go. So make the best of this test and don't ask why. It's not a question but a lesson learned in time. It's something unpredictable, but in the end is right. I hope you had the time of your life.
John, what is the scariest thing that you've experienced in your ghost hunting career?
Well, a couple of things. I think probably the most recent one that comes to mind was something that happened to me in Florida, in Brooksville, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I was investigating a place called the May Springer House, which is an old Victorian mansion filled with all period antiques and furnishings. I was there with two other people, and we did an overnight investigation. The ghost is supposed to be the ghost of a little girl named Jessie, a 3.5-year-old child who died in the house of some childhood diseases. And that's all, you know, documented as historical fact. And she supposedly moves things around the house, and they lock up toys at night, and they'll find them in the next morning scattered throughout the house, up and downstairs, all that kind of thing. I was there with a few people, and basically the entire night, nothing happened. It was very quiet and very calm, very peaceful, although eerily quiet. For an old house like that, there were no floors creaking, no roof creaking, nothing like that at all, which was very strange. It almost sounded like it was muffled, you know. We decided at about 3 o'clock in the morning that, well, probably nothing's going to happen anymore. Nothing's going to happen. It's very quiet tonight. Let's just leave. So we made a quick check of the perimeter, make sure everything was locked up and secure, and we started heading out through the back door, which is located in the kitchen. And as we walked through this kitchen, which had all kinds of sort of Victorian appliances there, I walked by a wood-burning stove. And on the stove is like a round metal, big iron disc with like a long, sort of like a ladle attached to it. And the idea is, you know, you would pull up the disc by this kind of ladle and throw in wood and then, you know, cover it again. Well, the thing was laying totally across the top of the surface. And as I walked by, I noticed out of the corner of my eye, I saw movement. And I looked over, and the ladle, just as I saw it, the ladle actually lifted up on its own and did a 180. It actually lifted up, flipped over, and slammed down on that cast iron stove. And it slammed down so hard that it actually popped off the lid that I was connected to and fell on the floor. And the other two people were right behind me. One was holding a flashlight, and the three of us all saw that happen, you know, and it defies any kind of, you know, physical laws. It couldn't have happened.
So tell me, how long did it take you to leave the house after that?
You know, we did leave right away. And the funny thing is, somebody asked me, why? And, you know, I stop and think now and say, why did we? I mean, something had happened right then and there.
Right.
But I guess we're human, you know, and I guess we said, okay, that's it, time to leave, you know. But the reality is maybe had we stayed a little bit longer, I mean, I don't know if perhaps we could have made some other, I don't want to say contact, but maybe something else could have happened, or perhaps we could have recorded something. You know, and of course, as fate would have it, we were on our way out, which meant that our cameras were securely in our cases, locked up. You know, tape recorders turned off, everything else. So all I have is my own and two eyewitness impressions, but nothing documented. We couldn't. It'd been great if we had our video cam rolling or something and we were walking out, but unfortunately we didn't.
John, have you ever made contact with a spirit?
Well, I did at a house in Ohio, in a farmhouse, myself and a couple of investigators and a psychic. And the way it was done was through a Ouija board. And I'm not a big fan of those. I really get uneasy when people use them. And myself and the other investigator didn't really want to do it, but the medium was sort of adamant about it. And we said, okay, we'll give it a shot. And through that, she contacted a woman who identified herself as Esther, and a woman who said that she died in that house in 1895, I believe was the year. And the odd thing was that about a month before, somebody had been at that house. Actually, this investigator, my fellow investigator, and her husband had been at that house. I was not there. And the husband happened to look up and saw what he described as a grandmotherly figure standing in the doorway. And he described her, you know, in a lot of detail. Later on, when we made this contact with the Ouija board, we asked this Esther if she was the person that Frank was his name, had seen earlier, like the month before, and the Ouija board said yes, that it was her. We also asked if she had children, and she didn't answer that one. But oddly enough, there had been, well, according to the psychic, there had been children in that house before that she said she moved on, as she likes to say, had them move on to the light, is her exact words. So, yeah, I mean, that's one type of contact. It's not as dramatic as more personal contacts where you obviously experience something firsthand without the aid of the Ouija board, but that was pretty odd that was happening, too.
So, John, what are your possible theories that might explain ghosts, then?
Well, I think there's a couple of different things that could be happening. I mean, of course, you know, the one thing is they could all really be in our minds. I mean, they really could be hallucinations that we conjure up, of course, unconsciously and not meaning to do so, but putting ourselves in a psychic state where we can do that. And I believe that's part of it, perhaps. Mm-hmm. I also think that there is a possibility that, you know, we're all creatures of energy and that we have some energy that, you know, perhaps we have psychic energy that could possibly leave an imprint or leave an impression upon the environment that we're in. So maybe 50 years later, 100 years later, whatever, after we're gone, it could be that our psychic imprint, if you want to call that, almost like a fingerprint, is still there. And that under the right circumstances, people who perhaps are sensitive to that kind of thing might witness us, or, you know, see whatever that experience was. So I think that's a possibility. Another possibility, you know, I've been reading a lot about quantum physics lately, and, well, that's amazing when you start getting into some of that. I don't pretend to understand, you know, half of what I read, but it's interesting when you read about the concept of parallel universes or alternate realities and other dimensions. And it could possibly be that what we're calling ghosts might actually be sort of occasions in which, you know, another reality our reality bumps up against another one, or our dimension bumps up against another momentarily. And there's sort of a connection there for a second or two where we're startled to see them. They may be as startled to see us on their side, you know.
Understandably, sure. Yeah. What is America's Haunted Road Trip series? One of our listeners would like to know.
Oh, this is great. I'm excited about this. It's a new series of books coming out by Clara C. Press in Cincinnati, Ohio. And what we're doing is I've been asked to be the editor for that series. What we're doing is we're coming out with individual state books. So in September, Ghost Hunting Ohio and Ghost Hunting Illinois, which I wrote a few years back for a different publisher, are being reprinted and are, again, out in the stands. Ghost Hunting New Jersey and Ghost Hunting Virginia are two new titles, so there's actually four coming out this year. And what I like about these books, Rob, is that they're written by people who are either in the know, sort of, the paranormal field, mm-hmm. or people who are sort of up and coming. For instance, the New Jersey book is authored by Laura Laddick, and I don't know if Laura's been on your show or not, but she's the founder of New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society, and she's a pretty well-known person in the field. Ghost Hunting Virginia has been written by Mike Warhola, who is a new guy coming up in the paranormal field, but he's very interesting and doing some interesting things. I've signed Rosemary Ellen Guiley, who you may know, for Ghost Hunting Pennsylvania for next year. I've also signed Patty Starr to do Ghost Hunting Kentucky for next year. So we're getting a lot of good writers, you know, for this series, so I think it's going to be exciting. The other thing about it is that each one of the places in these books are places, like I write about, in that they're all open to the public. So we're calling it Road Trip because we are really encouraging people to go out and visit these places for themselves. Take a road trip, you know, take a haunted road trip and see it through the author's eyes and then find out for yourself what you may experience. So I think it's going to be a great series, and I'm very excited about it. We actually kick it off tomorrow in Lexington, Kentucky at Scarefest. I'll be down there. I'll be talking about the books. We'll have a table set up there, so that'll be sort of the kickoff for the series.
1-877-528-8255 is toll free. John Kachuba is our special guest. We're talking about America's Haunted Road Trip, and John is the series editor of America's Haunted Road Trip, and he is also the author of Ghost Hunting Ohio, Ghost Hunter, How to Write Funny, and the co-author with his wife, Mary A. Newman, Ph.D., of Why Is This Job Killing Me? His website is www.johnkachuba.com. John, when it comes to so many different authors writing these books about, for example, Kentucky and Pennsylvania and New Jersey and wherever, how do you maintain quality?
I'm sorry, Rob, the last part got kind of cut off.
How do you maintain the quality of the book and the quality of the content if you have so many different authors?
Well, that's difficult. I mean, I do look for people who have something, you know, have some knowledge of the paranormal, but I'm also looking for people who are good writers. And I know Rosemary's work. I knew Mike Warhola's work, Patty Starr. So I am kind of looking for people like that. It's no different than being an editor for any other kind of book. You know, quality is maybe subjective in the sense that I'm the editor, so I sort of determine what the quality is. Hopefully I know what that is, but yeah, you're right. It's different because everybody has a different style and a different
That's right.
way of approaching things. And we're trying to, we have sort of, I don't want to say a template because, again, everybody is different and I don't want to stifle their individual, you know, creativity.
My name is Michael Telstar, Canada's leading mentalist from Toronto, Ontario.
Hi, my name is Splenda, and you're listening to my dad, Ron McConnell, on the X-Zone.
This is Psychic Dorothy from St. Catharines, and you're listening to Rob McConnell.
Hello, my name is Holly Reeves, an astrologer from Astro for You, and you're listening to Canada's number one paranormal radio show, The X-Zone, with Rob McConnell.
Welcome to The X-Zone, a place where fact is fiction and fiction is reality. Now, here's your host, Rob McConnell.
When I first saw you, I saw love. And the first time you touched me, I felt love. And after all this time, you're still the one I love.
Looks like we made it. Look how far we've come, my baby. We might have took the long way. We knew we'd get there someday. They said, I bet they'll never make it. But just look at us holding on. We're still together, still going strong.
John Kachuba is our special guest. His website is www.johnkachuba.com. And, John, what kinds of people experience ghosts?
You know, Rob, all kinds of people. I have to say that when I started getting into this a few years ago, I probably had some preconceived ideas of the type of people that were seeing ghosts.
Uh-huh.
And it probably wasn't very positive. But I've changed my viewpoint almost immediately once I got into it. I've interviewed people who, you know, I've interviewed police officers, I've interviewed nuns, I've interviewed, you know, truck drivers, grocery store clerks, scholars, you know, you name it, doesn't matter. All ages, all genre, all genders, everybody has experience like this. But I do think that there might be something to the idea of certain people maybe perhaps being more sensitive, you know, to that ability, let's say, to contact spirits or to see spirits. I think we may all have that ability to some degree, but it's kind of latent in most of us and unrecognized, and we don't know how to get at it or how to develop it. But I think sometimes that you can.
John, how did you get involved in the paranormal? What was the catalyst that made you decide to do what you do in the paranormal?
Well, I grew up in Connecticut, and I was very interested in history. Still am very interested in history. And a lot of times when you're studying history, you tend to learn some of the folklore kind of things about ghosts and all that. And that I did learn in Connecticut, and it appealed to me in a big way. And I also had the occasion while living in Connecticut to actually live in the same town and to meet Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Uh-huh.
Of course, you know, Ed has since passed away, but I'm sure your audience recognizes them as probably America's premier, you know, ghost hunters. And they early on sort of got me interested in this because I had visited Dudleytown in Connecticut, which was a haunted, old haunted town that's no longer just kind of a ghost town. But I went there actually for historical reasons. I was working on something totally different and had some pictures there that I thought were interesting and asked them to take a look at. And long story short, that's where it all happened. They said, well, they saw some paranormal images in my photos, and then I just became very interested at that point.
How do you do your research?
Well, my research is all, it's all personal based. I do a lot of reading on ghosts and what other people have read about, or have written about ghosts and where they've written, but I don't write about any places that I don't actually go to myself. So I go to the place, and as I say, they're usually places that are open to the public. I'll spend as much time as I can there interviewing people that work at the site, let's say, or visit it often or have some experiences there. But then I'll try to stay there. For instance, if it's a haunted hotel, I'll talk to all the, you know, the wait staff in the restaurant and the housekeeping staff and the desk clerks and anybody I can get my hands on, the security people. And then I'll also say, all right, so what's the haunted room? And they'll say, well, number 10. I'll say, okay, well, put me up at number 10 tonight, you know. And so that's what I'll do, and I'll just record whatever happens to me or my impressions, and you know, interweave that with the stories some other people have had experiences there.
Has there ever been a time when you've gone into, let's say, room number 10 and nothing happens? And if nothing does happen, how do you weave that into your story?
Well, I've gone to some places where, you know, nothing happened. And generally, I don't write about places like that because, you know, if nothing really happens, it's nothing to write about. On the other hand, if I do go to a place where maybe I don't experience anything, but I get a number of stories from people that, you know, are very, very involved, sort of very complex, and also similar to each other, sort of relating the same kinds of experiences, then I'll write about it, but I will tell my reader that, you know, I didn't experience anything there, but here's what other people have said has happened to them, and, you know, you make up your own, make up your own mind as to whether you think it was a ghostly experience or not.
What I'm seeing is that ghostwriters, if you'll excuse the term, put a lot of their own beliefs into what they write about. That not only do they incorporate some of the facts, some of the history, but they also incorporate their own beliefs, their own concepts. And this is what I was getting to before when I was asking about how you're going to maintain the quality of the series. For example, Patty Starr has one way of looking at the paranormal. The other authors that you mentioned also have their own ways of looking at the paranormal. So how are you going to maintain consistency, reality, instead of letting it go into the fringe?
Right. Well, it's a good question, you say consistency, and I'm not sure, to be honest, that I even want the books to be consistent. Because my idea, in my last book, Ghost Hunters, I interviewed a lot of people, a lot of different paranormal investigators, and I worked with a lot of different teams across America. And what I found out was that there is a wide range of beliefs in what a ghost is, you know, how they, what they do, why they do it, why they're here, whatever, how we see them, how we perceive them. There's also a wide range of ways for people to investigate. You know, some people are very technical-oriented and use a lot of equipment. Others are psychics or mediums and just use their mind. You know, there's everything in between. And so I'm fascinated by the fact that there are so many different approaches to it. So I don't really have a problem if somebody like Patty Starr, for instance, who has had ghostly experiences since she was probably a teenager and is well known as a psychic or a paranormal investigator. You know, I don't have a problem if she puts her particular spin on it, because I don't really think there is any, I don't really think there's any objective truth right now relative to the paranormal. I mean, I think we're all out there still looking for answers.
I think there's a lot of people all out there, you know, going for the almighty buck.
Well, that's true.
You know, there's a lot of scam artists out there. There are a lot of people who use their imagination, in order to fill their pockets.
There's no doubt about that. And, you know, I don't know, to be honest, I don't know how you sort them out. In my experience, as I've been writing these books, every so often, and luckily it has not happened that often, but once in a while I will get somebody who tells me a particular ghost story or something, and then, you know, I'll go back to them later on, and the details start changing. Mm-hmm. They become unreliable, and then I'm thinking, okay, here's somebody who wants to get their story in a book, you know, for whatever reason, and I can't rely on them, and so I don't use that story because I can't rely on it. But on the other hand, you know, is it possible that somebody could tell me a real great story or something and say it dead seriously and be lying about it, or you're conning me? Yeah, sure. I mean, it's possible. I really try to rule that out, you know, but you're exactly right. There are certainly people out there that are out to make a buck and are less than reliable. I'm hoping to use people that that I know something about their reputation and that, you know, come to me sort of highly, let's say, qualified and recommended.
All right. How do you, how would you, you know, like you say highly qualified.
Yeah.
Explain that.
Well, I think what that means in this field is probably just a lot of experience, and maybe a credible way of operating in the sense that they do things sort of by, well, there is no book. I'd say by the book, but there really isn't a book to go by. But they do things in a way that I think are objective, that I think allow for possibilities of natural occurrences, natural explanations, rational explanations, you know, before jumping off the bridge and saying it was a ghost. So I'm kind of looking for those folks, because to me that indicates some credibility.
But you just said yourself that if nothing happens, it's not going to be in the book. So what happens if these people continuously, and I'm sure they won't because they want to get the money from the book and they want to get part of the proceeds as well, so they're not going to give you stories where nothing happens. But so how are you going to gauge the validity and the actuality of these events happening? And how can you not say, well, all right, we don't know if this is true, we don't know if it's made up, but what the hell, it makes a good story and people are going to buy it.
Well, you know, I mean, those are all good points. And all I can say is that I'm trying to find writers who I know something about, who I feel that I can trust to be credible. It's tough. I know that when I was working with Mike Warhola in Virginia for Ghost Hunting Virginia, he frequently had places that he said, oh, this is a great place. You know, it was built in 1723, and, you know, George Washington was there, and, you know, all these people in the Civil War came to battles in the front yard. And he'll say, but I can't find anything haunted about it, but it must be haunted. You know, it seems so ripe for a haunting, but there wasn't anything attached to it. And so he was always disappointed. And we didn't use those places, and he had several. But I think what happens is, on the other hand, you have somebody like Laura Laddick, who wrote Ghost Hunting New Jersey. You know, Laura's been doing this for years and years and years. And, I mean, she's out almost on a daily basis doing an investigation someplace in New Jersey and beyond. So with all that, she probably has enough material, enough credible material, that we can, you know, get a book out of it. In fact, we did.
All right, I've got to ask you at this point, why do you call them investigations when people who go out ghost hunting are not investigators? They do not follow a protocol of investigation techniques. They're at the very best hobbyists.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's sort of the common term that's being used.
But it's a misnomer and it misleads the public.
Well, I don't know. I mean, does it really, how would you define an investigation?
Let's look at law enforcement. You do not become an investigator right off the bat. Even though you investigate a crime, you are not an investigator because it is a specialized skill that takes training, classes. It's just not something that's bestowed on you. It seems that every Tom, Dick, and Harry who becomes one of the researchers of the woo-woo crowd out there calls themselves investigators. And I think that this misleads the public into what the qualifications are of this person, which normally mean they are not qualified. And in any other field where there are legitimate standards in place, they would not be called researchers or investigators. They would be called hobbyists. And I think that by calling somebody who has never taken an investigation course in their life or has no concept on what a real investigation procedure is, and calling them investigators of the paranormal, it's a farce. It's misleading.
The problem with the whole idea of investigators, I mean, you do have your finger on something here, which is that you're exactly right, that there is no sort of...
There's no legitimacy.
Well, there's no authority or higher, you know, let's say a hierarchy or agency that says, okay, if you pass these tests or, you know, this kind of knowledge or you've had this experience, then you are an investigator. Right. There isn't anything like that.
Oh, yes, there is. I beg to differ. There are universities out there that offer parapsychology courses. You look at Lloyd Auerbach. He has a PhD in parapsychology. He is a real investigator.
Oh, right. No, that's right. I mean, there certainly are college courses. I'm aware of that. But I'm talking about, you know, what you're talking about, sort of the run-of-mill where everybody says they're an investigator. And it's a term that, I mean, you're probably right that I do use that casually.
Not just you, John. Not just you. It's misused in the UFO field. It's misused in every aspect of the paranormal because it is such... The paranormal is a little niche where if you don't fit into any other aspect of society, you can fit into the paranormal. And, you know, if you want to say, if you've got a vivid imagination, you fit in even better. And if you know how to write with a vivid imagination, you can make money at it.
Well, yeah, I suppose that's possible. I just think that, I mean, I know that in my experience there have been people who take it very seriously and who do follow protocols and procedures that, you know, they consider to be something, I don't want to say that they're exactly like I said the police would use, but, you know, taking statements from people and all this kind of stuff and mapping out rooms and trying to really do a thorough job in, and I'll call that an investigation.
John, I've got to take a commercial break. Please stand by. My name is Rob McConnell. This is the X-Zone, and we are coming to you live and around the world on the Talk Star Radio Network from our studios in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. Don't go away. We'll be back right after this commercial set.
There's a port on a western bay, and it serves 100 ships a day. Lonely sailors pass the time away and talk about their home. There's a girl in this harbor town, and she works laying whiskey down. They say, "Brandy, fetch another round." She serves them whiskey and wine. The sailors say, "Brandy, you're a fine girl.
You're a fine girl.
What a good wife you would be.
Such a fine girl.
Yeah, your eyes could steal a sailor from the sea."
John, does belief in ghosts coincide or conflict with traditional religious beliefs?
I have two different opinions on that. And actually, I'll just relate a quick story. Is that
sure.
I was at a book signing once at a library, and afterwards somebody came up to me and said that they were a Christian. They said they're a very strong Christian, and so they could not possibly believe in ghosts because that was the work of the devil. They'd have nothing to do with it. That person leaves, another person comes up to me and says almost verbatim, you know, almost the same thing. I'm a very strict Christian, and of course I believe in ghosts because I believe in an eternal soul and an afterlife, and that's what a ghost is, something that's just trapped, you know, between here and wherever we go. So I don't really think it conflicts. I mean, I think some people do feel that it does, that it has sort of this voodoo aspect, but a lot of cultures around the world, many cultures around the world, in their religious beliefs, have a belief in an eternal soul, in a spirit world. Call it ghost, call it spirit, you know, whatever you want. I mean, I think it fits into religion personally.
I can understand how the rematerialization of human structure may happen, and this is what people are seeing, whether it is in their mind's eye or in or excuse me, I'm getting a bad echo back here. Can somebody on Master Control do something about it, please? I'm sorry about that, John.
Okay.
I'm hearing myself seconds after, and it's rather confusing.
Right.
You know, like, I can understand how when people see the ghost of Aunt Mame or Uncle Harold, that's one thing. But where does the clothing come in that they're wearing? And how come we have never heard stories of people seeing the ghosts of dinosaurs, for example?
Yeah, that's a question I've been asked many times, and I don't have an answer for it. But this may go back to the theory, Rob, that I was talking before in terms of what ghosts might be.
Mm-hmm.
If in fact They might be hallucinatory or a product of our own sort of psychic energies, then we wouldn't see dinosaurs necessarily because we'd have no connection to them.
Mm-hmm.
But you might very well see your Aunt Mame or somebody because, you know, you remember the scent of her perfume or something, or something triggers something in our brain that calls up that recollection, and for whatever reason, we see it as a materialization. Whether that materialization is real or not is another question. And in Ghost Hunters, I talked to Dr. Andrew Nichols down in Florida, who is a psychologist with a strong interest in the parapsychology aspect. And he was, you know, he had those same sort of theories about what ghosts might be. They may very well be something that we're creating ourselves. On the other hand, in Buddhist philosophy, you have the idea of the tulpa, which is something that you can actually physically create from your mind. You know? So where
hey,
do we
John,
go with that?
I hate to do this, buddy, but we're out of time for tonight. I do want to thank you very much, and I wish you all the very best success in the world on your new project. And keep us in the loop on what's going on, will you?
Thanks, Rob. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I certainly will keep you in the loop.
Take care, John. Regards to your wife. Bye-bye now. When we come back from the news at the top of the hour at 6.5 minutes past, I'll be speaking to Stephen Eulish. We're going to be talking about UFOs, fallen angels, and much more as we continue.